Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Rosh Hashanah is daf Yud Beis, one Yud Alf Amud Beis, and we're in the middle of a discussion of the Mabul and the creation of the world, and a lot of big topics for today. And then after that, we're finished by the beginning of Yud Beis Amud Alf, and the middle of Yud Beis Amud Alf, and then we go back to the Mishnah, and we are going to continue discussing the Mishnah. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf will be learned with Zecher Nishmas, Lois Lupin Zaltzman, and we begin. On Yud Alf Amud Beis, so we stopped right in the middle of the Amud, it's a small Amud, and we had a discussion in terms of when the world was created. We had a machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. If you look back on Yud Alf Amud Beis, back to the beginning of yesterday's daf, so the Gemara brought a brisa, and the brisa brought down a very basic debate. If you look back then, you'll see Rabbi Eliezer Omer, B'tishrei Nivra Olam, said that the world was created in Tishrei, and then a whole series of other events that happen based on a particular month. It's either going to be Tishrei or it's going to be Nisan. And then if you continue and look on the top of Yud Alf Amud Aleph, so then you have the opinion of Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, but Nisan Nivra Olam, the world was created in the month of Nisan. So we have really a very basic machlokes in terms of when the world was created. Azdu L'tamayu. So we could just pick it up right from this point in time. We're now in Yud Alf Amud Beis, and we're going right into the Gemara. So the Gemara notes that they are consistent, meaning that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are consistent on this. And the Gemara here quotes now another brisa. The Gemara quotes Bishnah Sheish Meo Shana L'Chai Noach B'Chodesh Hashini B'Sheva Asar Yom L'Chodesh. So the Pasuk says in the beginning of the flood that it was in the 600th year of the life of Noach, in the Chodesh Hasheni, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month. Rabbi Yehoshua Omer, Oso Yom Yuzayin B'Iyahaya. So Rabbi Yehoshua says that is the second month, is Iyar. Meaning month number one is Nisan. Rabbi Yehoshua has the world being created in the month of Nisan. So that means month number one is always going to be Nisan. So the second month is going to be Iyar. And it's going to be the 17th day of Iyar. So Shemazel Kima Shokea Bayom. The constellation of Kima, I will explain this better in just a moment. I'm just going to read the words of the Brisa first, and then when I say explain it better, I mean a little bit better, not much better. But the constellation of Kima, Shokea Bayom, it normally sets during that day, Omayanos Mitma'atin, and generally speaking, the precipitation, the rain, diminishes, Omitoch Shashina Ma'asim, but because the people living at the time, humanity was so deviant, so Shina Kadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem, Ma'aseh Bereishis. So therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu also deviated from the from natural order. And what did Kadosh Baruch Hu do? V'hela Mazel Kima B'Yom. And what he did is he had Kima come out, the constellation of Kima come out during the day. Meaning at that point in the year, it normally sets at night, it comes out during the day. V'nal Toshnei Kochavim Mikima Ve'evi Mabul Olam. And Kadosh Baruch Hu took out two stars from the constellation of Kima, and a flood came and flooded the world. That is the opinion of Rav Yehoshua. So Rav Yehoshua, in this brisa, has a couple points to consider. Number one, that the Torah, when describing the flood, does not tell us which month it is. It just gives us a number. So Rav Yehoshua says, good. It's a number relative to Nisan. Nisan's month number one. The world was created in Nisan. So therefore, when the Torah describes the flood starting in the second month, on the 17th day of the second month, it means the 17th day of Iyar. And there was a change in natural order. So, and the Gemara gives, and the Brisa gives us a constellation explanation in terms of what exactly that change was. Kima normally sets at that point in time during the day, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has it that the constellation came up in the morning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took out two stars, and again, I'll explain that better, hopefully, in just a moment. Just finishing up the Brisa. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Osar Yom Yuzayin B'Mar Cheshvan Haya. Now Rabbi Eliezer says, no, that's the 17th day of Mar Cheshvan. Again, it's the same basic, the dates are all going to be the same, it's just a question of what your starting point is. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the date is going to be the second month, but the second month relative to Tishrei. Tishrei is month number one, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, the world was created in Tishrei. And therefore, on the 17th day of the next month, which is Mar Cheshvan, Yom Shemazel Kima Ola Bayom, so that happens to be a month in which Kima, it goes up in the morning. That's the natural order of that constellation. Oh, Mayanos Mizgabrim. And so therefore, that's where there usually is precipitation. Oh, Mitoch Shashino Masem, Shino Kadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem Ma'aseh Bereishis. But because the people were deviant, so Kadosh Baruch Hu deviated from the natural order. The Gemara later on will ask a very simple question. Well, what's the deviation? Meaning, What was the Kadosh Baruch Hu's deviation? If this constellation of Kima normally gets up in the morning, normally rises in the Marchesh of a month, and that normally is a forecast of precipitation, so then what exactly was the deviation? Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that question. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu took out two stars and he brought a flood onto the world. Period. Adkan, that's the end of the Braisa. Okay, so again, what has just happened in this Braisa is you see another reflection of this debate between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, whether the world was created in Nisan or whether the world was created in Tishrei. Okay, a number of points I'm going to try to go over before we go on in the Gemara, and we're going to ask a couple simple questions on this Braisa. First of all, let's just get our dates straight. Rashi, you see the long Rashi on Yud Aleph Amud Beis. So I'm going to summarize. I'll point out some of the points that Rashi makes over here, and I'll make some summary statements based on this Rashi. So first of all, in terms of our dating, okay, just some basic information we should all know. I told you to go over the Pesukim and Noach. Let's take it from Rabbi Eliezer's standpoint. Okay, we could do the same thing for Rabbi Yoshua, but just from Rabbi Eliezer's standpoint. The world is created in Tishrei, so therefore, the first month of the year is Tishrei. Okay, the flood comes in the second month, which means that the flood's coming in Mar Cheshvan, and more accurately, on the 17th day of Mar Cheshvan. So that's now when the rain starts coming down. How many days of rain are there? Okay, don't worry, I'm not going to quiz anybody. So there are 40 days of rain. 40 days of rain come on the 17th day of Mar Cheshvan, so that now takes us to the 27th day of Kislev. Okay, now, at the 27th day of Kislev, the rain stopped. Okay, and the water kept rising. Remember, the Torah describes how there was Mayanos, there were underwater, the water comes from both directions, from the top and from the bottom as well. So there's reservoirs of water underneath, and it rises. How long does it rise? The Torah describes 150 days. 150 days where the water comes up. So now, what are we looking at? From the beginning of the rain, 40 days of rain, plus another 150 days of water coming up, we are already now into the month of Sivan. Into the month of Sivan, finally, the water starts receding. The water recedes, the Torah describes, up until Chodesh HaAsiri. Chodesh HaAsiri until the 10th month. The 10th month, in the way we are describing it right now, is going to be the month of Tammuz. Okay. The month of Tammuz, the ark takes rest on the Ararat mountain up until you get to the month of Av. The month of Av, the mountains can be seen, and so basically Noah emerges from the ark not until a year later. Okay, and that's what we described yesterday in the 601st year of Noah's life. So he emerges from the Teva. Now, remember, we've made this point yesterday, just going to quickly reiterate. The Torah kind of conflates the years of the world and Noah's life. It's as if they're like one and the same thing. And I understand, he could have a different birthday than the years of the world, but the way the Gemara is reasoning is that these numbers are conflated. Fine. Okay, anyway, it has to be, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that everything begins and ends in Tishrei, because the entire event of the flood from beginning to end takes us more than a year. And we know that he goes in year 600 and he comes out in year 601. Again, it's relative to his life, but that doesn't matter. He goes in at 600 and he exits and he emerges in year 601. So that tells us that he goes a full year. It must be that the beginning of the flood begins in the second month of the beginning of the year, according to Rabbi Lazar, that's Tishrei. Comes out in year 601, that's the next year. In other words, we went through another Tishrei, and he doesn't come out until a year later. That is all according to Rabbi Eliezer. What we'll do for Rabbi Yoshua, same exact timeline, just starting in Nisan / Iyar, the 17th day of Iyar, not the 17th day of Mar Cheshvan, but then the timeline is going to be nearly identical. Okay, so that's just point number one. That's why this debate between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua is really contingent on their previous debate in terms of when the world was actually created. A word about the constellations. Okay, we've discussed this before. We're not going to belabor the point right now, but just a quick word. Right, everyone basically understand constellations. Constellations, the stars are fixed from our perspective, from where we sit on Earth. So the stars are fixed. The stars don't move. Right, the stars are set in a particular pattern on the sky. If you want to view the sky just simply as a dome from our perspective, so basically they're not going to move. What does move in the constellation? The sun moves within the constellation. The moon moves within the constellation. Planets move within the constellation. But the actual stars themselves do not move. The thousands upon thousands of stars that are visible to the eye are simply there and fixed. What ends up happening is that because the Earth is on a tilt, so the sun weaves in and out of the constellation. Where the sun does not have one straight path, I mean on a 90-degree perpendicular angle, but rather what happens is because the Earth is orbiting on a tilt, so therefore the sun from our perspective is going up and down. It goes right in the middle of the summer, so the sun is in the most northern point of the sky. In the middle of the winter, the sun is in the most in the beginning of the winter, the sun is in the most southern point in the sky, and obviously spring and fall, so the sun is hitting the equinox, the center. Okay, and basically what happens is that if you can look at each section of sky and give it a label, right, a constellation label, so basically over the course of the year, you're going to be watching the sun go in and out of every constellation. Now, to our eye, we don't see that, and the reason why we don't see that is very simple, because once the sun is out, you don't see any more of the stars. We know the stars are there, but obviously because of the radiance of the sun, we're not seeing the stars. But if we could forecast, if we could just, a little creativity, a little imagination, once we know where the constellations are, we can view where the sun is going, and we could, quote-unquote, see the sun go through the constellations. And the significance is that it is, if you want to say this, called an ancient wisdom, that once the sun goes through a particular constellation, so that influences weather, people's lives, etc., etc. We are, as a Jewish people, very open and receptive to this idea. Now, it does challenge the basic nature of free will, meaning how can the constellation have influence? What about the idea of free will? So there obviously is some balance between constellation and free will. That now is not a time for any kind of discussion, but you understand. The way we view the sky is that there are 12 constellations. In other words, so we have basically the sky bracketed off into 12 different constellations, which now makes great sense, meaning that as you go through the months, there are 12 months, so there are going to be 12 constellations representing the 12 months. Don't ask me about a leap year and the extra month. I don't know how to respond to that. The first of the constellations is Tle. Now, we're going to assume that Tle, the first constellation, which, by the way, you understand the horoscopes, which, you know, obviously espouse, you know, I'm usually not critical, but espouse nonsense. But you listen to me long enough, you know, I'm not a critical person. But you're usually the horoscopes, but they operate with the 12 constellations, meaning that this ancient wisdom that we subscribe to as well, this is something that is, you know, that is a widely held belief by more than just the Jewish people. But so the first constellation that's in the month of Nisan, so that's Tele, that's what's called Aries. Okay, so that is the constellation of that's the first constellation, and then you go on. I made this point before, but the constellations obviously have an influence on the month. And you could look at the nature of the month just simply by the constellation. I'll give you an example. I've given this one before. The third constellation in the month of Sivan. Sivan's the third month. What's the third constellation? So what's the modern name for it? I forgot. Number three. Anyway, it's the twins. Gemini. Okay, fine. Thank you. So the third constellation is what's referred to in the Sfarim as Ta'omim. It's the twins. What happens in the month of Sivan? So everything comes in pairs, meaning the two luchos that come down, the shtei halechem, the two loaves of bread, the shtei kivsei atzeres, the two lambs that are brought on Shavuos, meaning it's a pairing. You can look at the constellation and you just simply, the seventh month, what's the constellation for the seventh month? Maznayim, right? Libra, is that right? No? right? That's correct? It's good. So that's a scale. So again, think of the seventh month. What's the seventh month from a constellation standpoint? Tishrei, judgment, scales. It's some of it's like obvious. I'm not espousing anything smart right now. It's just obvious. So the so good. So and so basically, what's happening over here is that the Gemara says is that we have a general constellation that we assume that happens over the course of various months, and based on that constellation, so therefore it's predictive of certain weather patterns. Again, you take a look at Rashi. Rashi tells us, I gave a constellation from the monthly perspective. You can also give a constellation from an hourly perspective as well. You take a look at Rashi. Rashi delves into this. Rashi notes that in the month of Iyar, which is the way Rav Yehoshua views it, in the month of Iyar, so normally the constellation of Kima. Now, Kima is really the tail end, literally, of the constellation of Tle. This is the way Rashi presents it. So basically, if you will, Kima is the tail of Tle. And what happens normally in the month of Iyar is that you're going to see that setting at the end of a day. Right? Remember, because the earth is spinning on a 24-hour cycle, so in a 24-hour cycle, we see every single constellation at various hours of the day. And so what happens is that every hour of the day, you're going to see one constellation rising in the morning and another constellation setting at the end of the day. So basically, the way Rashi describes it is that in the month of Iyar, the constellation of Kima, which is the end of Tle, is setting. So according to Rav Yehoshua, what happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically changed the entire constellation so that it is rising. And apparently Kima is a predictor, if you will, for rain. It rises. And furthermore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took out two stars. What is the significance of taking out two stars? Because it weakens it so that now there's less heat. In other words, again, this is well beyond my understanding. But in other words, the number of stars, Rashi describes it as having this constellation having many stars. Kadosh Baruch Hu, by taking out two stars, it diminishes the heat and therefore allows for even more rain to come. Okay, that's a really, really simple, basic explanation of the Gemara. Obviously, just scratching the surface.
Stars don't really generate any
heat. Again, you're confusing this discussion and science. Don't do that. It's not a scientific discussion. This is just a, in other words, right? It's a way to understand it. It's just not a. This is not science. So Bishlam al Rav Yehoshua good. So far so good. So now that's the very basics. I just gave you just a simple presentation, but basically now what comes out based on these Gemaras is that according to Rabbi Yehoshua, flood started in Iyar. According to Rabbi Eliezer, flood started in Mar Cheshvan. Now, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, I get it. The Jewish people. Sorry, I'm in the wrong time period. The humanity deviated in their ways, and therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu had to deviate natural order. And even though the beginning of the spring is usually no rain, Kadosh Baruch Hu created rain, and by changing around the stars, which influence this. Okay. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the rain comes in Mar Cheshvan, which prompts the Gemara to ask, Bishlama l'Rabbi Yehoshua and Yud Beis Amad Aleph. Four lines from the top. This is now right after the Brisa finished. Bishlama l'Rabbi Yehoshua hainu dichtiv sheni. El Rav Elazar my sheni. Now, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, the sheni makes a lot more sense. Because, like we say time and again, Nisan is month number one. We've established on the beginning of the Masechta. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, what is Sheni? Mar Cheshvan is not the seventh month, it's the eighth month. So the Gemara says, Sheni Ladin. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. But over here, in Parshas Noach, when the Torah is describing the months, the number of the months, we mean two is relative to when HaKadosh Baruch Hu cast judgment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cast judgment on Tishrei, which, by the way, makes perfect sense. Tishrei is the month of judgment. All humanity goes in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for judgment. And so therefore now, 17th of Iyar, the flood comes down. Bishlam al Rav Yehoshua hainu deshina. El Rav Elazar my shina. Now according to Rav Yehoshua, I understand that there needs to be a change of the natural order. Because springtime, Iyar, that's not when it starts raining, Kadosh Baruch Hu caused it to rain by manipulating the stars, the influences of this world. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, where is their Shina? Where is their deviation? It is Mar Cheshvan. It is the beginning of the winter. It's supposed to rain. So, the Gemara says, yeah, there was still a deviation. And that normally, how does rain come down? Rain comes down, cool. All right, not hot water. But for the Mabul, there was a change in that the water that comes down is hot. So, and why? Because of Verotchim Kilkulu, Verotchim Nidonu. Because humanity at the time, so how did they sin? They sinned berisicha, with something that was heated. Rashi describes that basically they were sexually deviant, and that was and the zera that they're produced is hot. It's coming out of the body, and so therefore that was their sin as a result of that. Beroschin idonu. So therefore, the water that comes down to flood the entire world is hot as well. The mida keneged mida. Right, one of the most common themes that occur both in the Gemara, Rashi and Chumash, Mida Keneged Mida, and that was the change in the natural order. Veroschen Kilkulu Ba'Avero, Veroschen Nidonu Ksiv Hacha. Now, in terms of Veroschen Kilkulu, that the people were deviant, and they were deviant in Arayos, so the Gemara says, okay, that's just simply that we know. Even though it is interesting, if you look at the Psukim, the Torah describes what was the big Avera of the people? Chamas, theft. So a little bit tricky to figure out what exactly was like the sin of humanity at the time. Was it that they stole from one another, or as the Gemara over here says, is that they were deviant in arayos, in illicit relations. But nevertheless, our Gemara is very clear that they sinned with arayos, and therefore rosh chenidonu. So therefore, the water was hot. How do I know that? Where do I see that in the Pesukim? Ksiv hacha v'yishoku amayim, ksiv hasam v'chamas ha-melech shachacha. Go to Megillas Esther. You see the king was hot, right? The king was angry. And what does he do? He kills Haman. And by killing Haman, what then happens? He cools down. Okay, that took care of that. Okay, one less problem I have in this world. Okay, he calmed down. So, but you see the word shachacha means to cool down. V'yishoku hamayim. That means that the water cooled down.
The word Hamas is warm also.
Correct. But that's not the word used in Parshas Noach is not Hamas, is Vayashoku. So the word Vayashoku comes from the word Shachacha, which means it cooled down. This is after the waters came. So in other words, the waters were hot. Tana Rabbanan. Okay? So far, so good. What have we been dealing with these past couple of days? A very basic issue in terms of when the world was created. Your two options are Tishrei and Nisan. Now here, as per the instructions of the Rishon LeZion, right last night, who says that learning Gemara is nice, but you got to learn Halacha. So over here now, let's get to the bottom line. So when was the world created, in Tishrei or in Nisan? You're going to be surprised by the Gemara's response. So the Gemara says the world is created. Tanu Rabbanan Chachmei Yisrael Monim LaMabul Karebi Eliezer. Ulitkufa Karevi Yoshua. Chachme Yisrael, the scholars of Israel, the Jewish scholars. So when they would count the world, meaning they would give years to the world. Meaning right now we're in the year 5774 from Briyas HaOlam, from creation. So when do we turn the clock? We turned it on Tishrei. Right? So Monim Lamabel Karebi Eliezer. So when figuring the Mabul, the flood, and not just the flood, but any historical event. So we're going to Tishrei. So we count from Tishrei. However, Ulatkufa ke Rev Yoshua. But when establishing Tkufa, we turn to Rev Yoshua. Meaning, we've said this already a couple of times, but let's say it again. Really, our halachic decision is going to follow Rev Yoshua. The world was created in Nisan. We assume that ground zero for the seasons, for the moon, for the Molad, is Nisan. Therefore, we assume that if you go back 5,774 years, and you go back to the point of creation, where everything is at the point of perfect conjunction, that's not going to go to Tishrei, but in year, or however you want to say it, in year one and year zero. But in the, let's say nice and simple, in the beginning, so everything was set at Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The first of Nisan, That's when the molad begins. And as I explained earlier, that means that for our purposes, for our significance, when we calculate the molad, which, you know, before every Rosh Chodesh, right, the Gabbai gets up at shul and says, the molad's going to be, what is he talking about? He means that at a particular point, it is an astronomical event. It's not based on anybody's, on any one particular time point. It's an astronomical event. We happen to say, our minhag is, that in Yerushalayim, the molad's going to be at such an hour. So we who live 7 hours behind, so for us, we're just simply, if you want to know when the molad's going to be, I mean, it's not like, you know, you set your clock, you're like, okay, the molad's right now, or is it what's happening? Nobody knows. But it means that at the point of molad, so now it's conjunction. The sun, the moon, the earth are totally aligned. The moon is totally invisible to us. And that is at a constant rate of 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. And basically, when do we look at that starting point? The first day of Nisan at creation, not the first day of Tishrei. So in other words, basically our assumption is the world was created in Nisan. In terms of figuring in terms of plotting out world events and figuring out what year we're in, so we go like Tishrei. So in other words, it is a little bit confusing.
Yeah, how do you reconcile?
There's no reconciliation, meaning... When speaking to one another, so we're going to say Tishrei is the new year. That's how we speak colloquially. But in terms of recognizing when the world was actually created, it was created in Nisan. It's not a contradiction. It's just there's parlance. There's how we speak to one another, and then there's the reality. Yes.
So just like Shabbos was in thought first and created last, just like the Jewish people were in thought first, created last. Perhaps in Nisan was the thought, and then the other
way around. Meaning it's a great idea, but go the other way around. Meaning the world was actually created in Nisan. Tishrei, you could say, was the conception of the world. But Nisan will be the action. No, in other words, when the Gemara is saying right now that Tekufa goes from Nisan, it means that the world was actually created in Nisan. That's the conclusion. And then, oddly enough, the Gemara says one more line of Gemara before we finish the section. Chachmei Mosa Olam, and in terms of the scholars of the world, so Monim Aflamabel Karev Yoshua. So they do everything like Reb Yoshua, meaning that they view creation from Nisan, and also when they talk about the years of the world, they also go to Nisan as well. Okay. What we get from that, I'm not sure, meaning that there's a discrepancy between the way we count the years of the world and they do. I'm not really sure. And to make things even stranger, the Gemara noted that when we count the years of a king, so we, the Jewish people, count from the month of Nisan, and they, the Umos Olam, count from the world of Tishrei. So now, just pointing out, I'm not, this question is not going to keep me up at night, but it is a little bit strange that now the Gemara has just concluded that when we count the world, we count from Tishrei, even though we know the world was created in Nisan. And when the non-Jews, when the scholar, the non-Jewish scholars count the world, so they count from Nisan, even though they're kings and really their new year is Tishrei. Okay, so.
So why did it count between Nisan and Tishrei? What was the date? There was no date.
I don't know. you have to ask somebody who was there.
That in Nisan Hashem just thought about the creation and the actual creation.
Other way around, meaning in Tishrei there was a conception, right? Rabbi Natan writes this.
Nisan was a conception. Tishrei was a creation.
What the Gemara is saying right now is that Nisan the world was created.
Created.
That's the Gemara's conclusion.
Conception.
And conception would be Tishrei. Tishrei was conception. Well, in other words, what we do every month is that basically whatever the molad was the previous month, we add 29 days, 12 hours, 793 chalakim. In other words, you want to...
Is it the same always?
Yeah. It's a constant number from one to the next. Whatever that constant number takes us to. In other words, I don't remember, and I'm the one who announced it. So, in other words, the Gabbai announced right the month of the month the molar for the month of Iyar is, and he gave you a day, a time, and a second. So what was that? That was that constant number from the previous molar. Huh? It's a constant. It's a constant. Now you want more discussion on this? There's actually, you know, astronomically, it's not an absolute constant. What we're looking at is the average. But okay, just to keep everything simple, it's a constant. Call it a constant. It works. No. Well, in other words, what we do? No. What we do is that we don't have a month of 29 and a half days. So what we do is that we basically observe a 29 day month and a 30 day month, so that we're going to basically, with our variable, we're going to get that average. Now, obviously, it's not perfect what I'm describing, because remember, it's 29 days, 12 hours, and about 43 minutes. Those 43 minutes add up pretty quickly. So what we do is basically 29, 30, and then every now and then you hit it, we get hit with another 30. Okay, that's okay. Yerakos. Next in the Mishnah, or in Yud Beis Amud Aleph, right in the middle of the Amud, and we are still discussing our Mishnah. Our Mishnah taught us that Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is the beginning of Shanim, Shemitah, Yovel, Netiyah, and Yerek. Okay, so, it was just as a quick refresher. Shanim, what was that? Three opinions in the Gemara what Shanim were. Either the documents of kings, or Tkufa, which we just finished discussing again, or Din, it's judgment. Shemitah, and by the way, note, okay, can we just also make the following point? Our Mishnah is following like whose opinion? Rabbi Eliezer. Who does the Halacha follow like? Rabbi Yoshua. Okay, just... We've seen that before. Next thing mentioned in the Mishnah, Shemitah. Shemitah begins on the first day of Tishrei. Yovel, we discussed that already in length. When does Yovel actually begin? The first day of the month, 10th day of the month. That was a Machlokas Tanaim. Our Mishnah obviously subscribes to the viewpoint that Yovel begins on the first day of the 50th year, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Netiyah, okay, we spent some time talking about that. What was Netiyah? Arla. That the 3 years of the tree from the tree is planted is marked by the month of Tishrei. So remember, that was a couple days ago. We discussed how you plant the tree 44 days prior to Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Count that as year number one. And then two more Rosh Hashanahs after that. And now the tree is not Arla. Not exactly, as we pointed out. You have to wait to Tu B'Shvat. Okay. Then, Yerakos. Okay, that's the next thing mentioned in the list in the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah. And for the rest of today's daf, we get to discuss a little bit about vegetables. Okay, Yerakos, Maasros, and Nedarim. Okay, and then, I'm sorry, Tana, we learned on Abraisa, vegetables, Maasros, and Nedarim. A brief introduction. We know that every year in Eretz Yisrael, outside the Shemitah year, so you have to take off tithing, Trumos, and Maasros. The schedule is generally constant with one variable. Every year of the 6 years prior to the Shemitah year, you take off Truma Gedola, 2% that goes off to the Kohen. Then you take off 10% of what's called Maaser Rishon. Then you take off another 10%. What is that next 10% that you take off? That's a variable. In years 1, 2, 4, and 5, it's Maaser Sheni. In years 3 and 6, it's Maaser Ani. There is no requirement to take off Trumas and Maasers off of vegetables. Vegetables is not required. Trumas, there's no Chiyuv of Trumas and Maasers min haTorah on vegetables. Trumas and Maasers is only obligated on grapes, olives, and the grains, and the five grains. The Rambam says, Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says what I just presented was Rashi and Tosfos. The Rambam says all fruit are obligated in Trumas and Maasers min haTorah. Okay? but everyone is in agreement that vegetables are not obligated in Trumas and Maasers min haTorah. The Chachamim stepped in. The Chachamim said that there's an obligation of Trumas and Maasers on the vegetables as well. So Trumas and Maasers on Yerakos is a din derabbanan. It's rabbinic law. It's rabbinically mandated. The Gemara now goes on to describe Yerakos Maininu Maaser Yerek. So the Gemara says we're talking about the tithing of the vegetables. Hainu Maasers. The Gemara says, isn't that the same thing as Maasers? So the Gemara says, no, Tana derabbanan v'katani daraisa. So no, the point of the Braisa is to teach us rabbinic law, meaning the tithing of vegetables, and then the araisa, the tithing of... I'll stay with Rashi and Tosos. No disrespect to the Rambam, and it's easier this way. It works. The Mishnahs work out better. So grains, olives, and grapes. But listen to Daraisa Bereisha. A little bit strange that the Bereisha would first put the Darabanans and then the Daraisa. The Gemara says, no, it's not so strange. I did the Chavibi Le'akhtame. The Gemara says this very often. We love the Darabanans. Meaning, the Gemara here is helping us with our attitude. Our attitude should be not, well, right, why did the Chachamim step in, but thank God the Chachamim stepped in. The rabbis made injunctions. They have the power to do so. Not only do they have the power to do so, but they're doing so to help us. So when they step in and they enact, so good. Chaviva, it's beloved to us. And so therefore, when the Braisa puts it, the Braisa will put in the Rabbanan Yerakos, followed then by the Daraisa of Masras. V'tani Didan. And now, our Mishnah. Isn't a little bit strange that our Mishnah mentions the fact that we have to tithe the vegetables and doesn't mention anything about Maisros, about the olives and the grapes and the grains? So the Gemara says, Tana Darabban v'chol shekein Daraisa. Yeah, the Gemara says, yeah, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist. Meaning our Mishnah mentions the Yerakos, which is tithing Darabbanan. If tithing Darabbanan follows Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, so then we can all figure out that the Daraisa is also going to be following the beginning of Tishrei as well. So the Gemara says, why doesn't the Mishnah just mention Meiser, meaning period? So the Gemara says, well, we know, because there are two types of Meiser. There's Meiser Behema and there's Meiser Dagon. The Velisne Yerek, why does our Mishnah choose the term Yerakos? Why not mention Yerek? Trey Gavni Yerek. So the Gemara says, no, our Mishnah can't mention Yerek because Yerek by itself can come in two different formats. The Mishnah in Maestros teaches us, this is the beginning of Masechta Maestros, one of those Masechtas that are found in Seder Zrayim. We don't learn it in the Daf Yomi. Okay, I looked it over inside in preparation. Yerek HaNe'egad Mishiyaged V'she'enu Ne'egad Mishimala Esakli. We've had the discussion already a couple of times. Remember back in Masechta Beis, we discussed this in detail. There's what's called a koveya, meaning fruits and vegetables. When they grow out in the field and they're finished growing, and I pluck them in the field, are they obligated in Trumas HaMaisros? Not yet. And out in the field, if you want to snack on the fruits and vegetables, you may do so. But once you're koveya, once you finish the processing, so then it's obligated in Trumas HaMaisros. What is a koveya? What, right? So if you remember, we discussed the way I quoted the Rambam. So there are six different things which will be a koveya. That's in the world of fruits and the fruits and the grains. What about when it comes to vegetables? So the koveya is, so that's exactly what we're describing. So yerek ha-ne'egad, if it's a vegetable that's usually bundled, mishiyaged. So when is the koveya? From the point of bundling. V'she'eno ne'egad, but when it's not bundled, mishimale sekli, when you put in the kli. Okay, so there are different types of yerakos, different types of vegetables, based on the vegetable, that'll determine when it's obligated in Maestros, Trumas and Maestros, and so therefore, that's why the Mishnah couldn't say Yerek. Tana Rabbanan, Lika Yerek Erev Rosh Hashanah Ashalot Tavo HaShemesh. Let's say I plucked a vegetable right before Rosh Hashanah, meaning it's the eve of Rosh Hashanah, I'm out in my field, and I'm plucking a vegetable. This vegetable now will be for the previous year. And then what I do, and then what I do is I pluck a vegetable after sunset. Now it should bother you. When am I plucking the vegetable? On Rosh Hashanah. That's a malacha. One's not allowed to do that. You can take a look at the very top Tosfos on the Amud Beis, Amud Beis. Tosfos, of course, the Gemara Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi says, the non-Jew plucked it out of the ground. You didn't do it because if you did it, that would be a malacha. So just to assume that everyone's following the halacha, so you had a non-Jew pluck it out. You can't ask him to do it. That's a separate issue. Okay, but anyway, the basic point is as follows. Let's just focus on the main point. A vegetable is plucked out of the ground on before sunset of Rosh Hashanah, and then the vegetable is plucked out of the ground after sunset of Rosh Hashanah. They belong to two different years. Mishitav Hashemesh. Ain Torma Mamaisa Mizah Al Zah. Lafisha Ain Torma Maisa and Lamin Achadash Al Yashan. Vlamin Ayashan Al Achadash. And because now they belong to two different years, so therefore, in terms of tithing, they have to be tithed separate from one another. It's like most of the tax law that we're used to, meaning that you separate taxes on the income you earn that year, and you can't separate taxes on income you earn this year for the previous year, for the year before that. Every year is kept separate. Same thing with Trumos and Maestros. Every year is kept separate. Once we know that Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, what we call Rosh Hashanah, is the beginning of the new year, so you can have two vegetables plucked 5 minutes apart from one another. They belong to two different years. That's the basic point of the Braisa. Im Haisa. All right, you want to complicate matters?
What
did you say? plucking out during the Ben Hashemeshes period. Okay. Im Haisa. It's a good question. Im Haisa Shnia Nechneset Lishlishis. Now, in addition to the fact that they have to be kept separate from one another for tithing purposes, also the tithing itself is going to be different. For example, says a Braisa, let's say we're in the second year of the Shemitah cycle, and now Rosh Hashanah now is going to mark the third year of the Shemitah cycle. So now, not only are they separate, but the recipients are going to be different. In year number two, who's the recipient of that second tithing? You. You're the recipient. Meaning you take off the next 10%. The first 10% goes to the Levi, that's a constant. The next 10% that you take off is Maaser Sheni. What do you do with the Maaser Sheni? You keep it. You bring it to Yerushalayim. You eat in Yerushalayim. Or if you'd like, you can transfer it onto money. The money will have the Kedusha. And then you go to Yerushalayim and you spend the money in Yerushalayim. Fine. But in other words, and then in the third year, what happens to that second tithing? That's Maaser Ani. That's earmarked for the poor people. So that and that they're the recipients of it. So if this is a Rosh Hashanah, which is marking the end of the second year and the beginning of the third year, not only are they separate from one another, but the recipients are going to be different than one another. So im ha'isa shnia nechnasot l'shlishi, shnia ma'isa rishon ma'isa sheni, shlishi is ma'isa rishon u'ma'isa ani. Period. Ad kan divrei ha'braisa. Good. Very straightforward, very basic agricultural law that we're learning today, in that Rosh Hashanah marks the beginning of the end of Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani. And furthermore, when it comes to vegetables, everything is predicated on the sunset of Rosh Hashanah. And they also have the very basic halacha that in years 1, 2, and in year 4, 5, the second tithing is Maaser Sheni. In year 3 and 6, that second tithing is Maaser Ani. The Gemara now asks a really simple question, and that is, how do we know? In the Torah itself, does the Torah give us this schedule of 1-2, which years 1-2, Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, and in year 3, Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Ani? And the answer is no. The answer is simply, the Torah does not actually state this explicitly. And so the question the Gemara now is dealing with is a very simple question. How do we know the schedule if all we're doing is reading Chumash? There is no indication in Chumash itself that this is the exact schedule. And then, by the way, years 4, 5, and 6, same thing. Years 4 and 5, Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. And in year 6, Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Ani. So where is all this? Where's all this coming from? That's the Gemara's question. And so the Gemara is going to quote Pesukim to make this point. Just getting to the Pesukim. Okay, let's see the Gemara inside. Menani milam rav shu malevi kisech halal aser kol ma'aser tvo aschach b'shana ashlishis. Shnas hama'aser. When a person finishes, this is Parshas Kisavo. When a person finishes all of his tithing, of all of the miser of his field, of his grains, in the third year, Shnat HaMaaser, the year of miser. The Torah describes year 3 as the year of miser. What does that mean? The Gemara explains, Shana Shein Bo Ala Miser Echad. Year 3, there's only one miser. Ha Ketzad, so how does that work? Miser Rishon Miser Ani, or Miser Sheni Yivatel. So what happens is that in year 3, we have Maaser Rishon, We don't have a second Meiser. Now, there is another 10% that's given off, but that's given to the poor people. But it's Meiser Rishon, not Meiser Sheni. It is 10%, but in other words, it doesn't have the Meiser Sheni status. It's not your second 10%. It just doesn't have that name. Now the Gemara says, now is that compelling? It's not compelling. Oh, I know off Meiser Rishon, not Mivatel. Maybe that what we do away with is Meiser Rishon. Meaning maybe in that third year, stick with Meiser Sheni and get rid of Meiser Rishon. Gemara says no. The Gemara says, no, that is not open for consideration. Meiser Rishon is a constant. How do I know that? The Gemara goes to Parshas Korach. Parshas Korach, the Torah describes that the Levim, who are going to be the recipients, what are they receiving? Going back to the Pasuk, rereading the Pasuk. The El Levim to Daber Vamart Alehem, you'll say to the Levim, Kisikhumes Bene Yisrael Samaser, you're going to take Meiser from the Jewish people, Asher Nasati Alechem Mi'itam, Benachal Ascham. It's an inheritance to you. The Torah describes Meiser Rishon that the Levim receive as an inheritance. Hikishu Akasav Lenachala. Ma nachla ein lo hefsek, av Meiser Rishon ein lo hefsek. Nachla, by definition, is a constant. What is nachla? You own it, you die, it goes to the next. They die, it goes to the next. It is constantly being passed down from one to the next. Meiser Rishon, the allocation of Meiser Rishon also is going to be a constant. Every year of the Shemitah cycle, except for the seventh year. So, there is. But in the seventh year, however, there's no Meiser, period. Meaning where everyone's on the same footing. So, but every year that there is a Meiser allocation, the Levim are going to get their Meiser Rishon. So it is not even open for discussion that what the Torah over here is doing away with Meiser Rishon. That's not up for entertainment. So therefore, what happens is in years 1 through 6, there's going to be Meiser Rishon. And then the Torah describes, and you know what happens in years 3? And consequently, of course, when we say year 3, we also mean year 6 as well. Meaning in that 3-year pattern, in year 3 and in year 6. So the Torah describes this is the year of Meiser. Meaning that it's only going to be Meiser Rishon, and it's not going to be a Meiser Sheni. And then what replaces that is Meiser Ani. Tanya Idach, let's just finish this discussion up. We are now right in the middle of Yud Beis Amud Beis. We're going to have another Braisa, which essentially is going to make this very same point again. Perhaps in a slightly different way. When you finish tithing, meaning the Torah describes, again, same, we're going back to the beginning of Parshas Kisavo. In that third year, it's Meiser Rishon, it's Meiser Ani, there is no Meiser Sheni in the third year. I might have thought, now let's do away with Meiser Rishon as well. Tamalomer uva Levi calls manche ba tein lo. Div Rav Yehuda. The Levi comes, meaning that any time the Levi comes, you have to give him Meiser Rishon, and that would be true in year 3 and year 6 as well. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer and Tzarech. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says no, not necessary. Hareyu Omer ve'alavim tedaber v'amart alem kisi chumes bnei Yisrael asamaser asher nasati lachem biitam benachlas cham. The Torah describes that. The Meiser Rishon as being nachala, it's an inheritance. He kishu akasul nachala, my nachala ain't lo hefsek, my Meiser Rishon ain't lo hefsek. So the same drasha that we quoted earlier, now we know how to attribute it. It's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, just like the Torah describes Meiser Rishon as a nachala, and just like a nachala doesn't have a break in its being passed down. Same thing is true with Meiser Rishon. Any year that there's an allocation of Meiser, there is going to be Meiser Rishon. So when the Torah describes the third year as being a different year, it's different in what sense? We're not doing away with Meiser Rishon, therefore we do away with Meiser Sheni. What did he do? He canceled Meiser Rishon?
Yeah.
Or he get right? Didn't he give it all to the Kohanim? Right? Am I remembering correctly? I think he reassigned it to the Kohanim. I don't think he did away with it. Okay, hopefully if I remember correctly. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we're going to continue in the Mishnah. Nedarim is our first topic for tomorrow. and then back to Truma Samayim.